It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to your Golden Gophers are undefeated and they're ready to take it into September as your Golden Gophers get the opening night victory, a 23-10 win over Luke's third favorite MAC team, the Buffalo Bulls. It's a little sad here, Luke, I will admit, though, to start, because we are not going to have the what I would assume is the favorite member of this podcast for the non-conference, as Derek Burns is unfortunately tied up with other duties.
Yeah, you know, he's a busy guy. We don't blame him. But, yeah, we'll miss him in the non-conference. But, you know, we'll do our best to go through these games and break them down as best we can. The Gophers obviously won this game 23-10 against the Buffalo Bulls. A very interesting game to break down, I think, Ryan, for many sorts of reasons. But yeah, so we're recording here late on a Friday evening. And maybe Ryan, before we get into the actual game, let's maybe just talk about quickly the tragedy that happened in Minneapolis at Annunciation. I want to start, Ryan, maybe quickly just with like Flex opening comments. You happen to be in the room, and then I have some thoughts I want to share as well quickly, but yeah, give me just the general vibe about, like, I thought he did a very nice and articulate job of communicating, the importance of football relative to what's happening in the greater, in Minneapolis and the greater state of Minnesota.
Yeah, after the game, Fleck comes into the post-game media room, which is on the bottom floor. And normally when he comes in after a victory, I've been doing this now for all 9 years of the PJ Fleck era. There's a little jump in his step. There's a smile on his face. But when he entered the room Thursday night, he was deadpan. I mean, you could tell that there was going to be something coming out of his mouth, like he had a message to deliver. And for those of you who haven't seen his 2.5 minutes of talk, if you want to read it, it's on Gopher Illustrated. I know that there's video out there of it too, just talking about essentially, and again, I don't pretend to have it word by word, but I'll paraphrase, and Fleck saying he's not a politician, but what happened is a tragedy. And I think he used the word demonic to kind of describe it, and the fact that if they could have just... on Thursday night, given those families and their loved ones 3.5 hours of taking their minds off of what happened this past week, then it's a win in his book, regardless of what the result was. But not every head football coach would do something like that, come in there and give 2.5 minutes worth on that unfortunate tragedy. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, so just quickly, I think, you know, I talk frequently about how college football and just sports in general are able to bring shared moments together. I think that's part of what makes life wonderful is sharing moments with loved ones. Dane Moore did a good job on his podcast. If people listen to his podcast, talking about community in general, right? I'm not going to try and repeat what he said, but Ryan, we are a small distraction as a podcast for people, whether it's a workout or a drive in the car, or the frequent lawnmower joke that we get. We're a very small distraction in life. And football in some ways is a small distraction in life. And we do have a little community here that we've built. The relationship is unique in that you and I largely talk at people and they choose to listen to us talk. I don't take for granted the fact that you opt in to listen to us. And I will admit that it was very challenging to actually, I was out of town, to actually be out of town after this happened. And seeing people talk about their experiences in and around or associated with Annunciation, and just the horrible tragedy. A friend of ours, Ryan James, has connection there, and obviously tough to know what he's having to deal with and grieve. And grieving largely, Ryan, is something that's done not independently. It can be done independently, but we collectively grieve as communities as well. And it especially hit home for me, this situation and this tragedy, because of the age of one of the kids is the exact same age as my kid. And I didn't take for granted walking around the streets of Chicago holding his hand, and I never will. I can't even imagine the pain that those people are going through. And if you are one of those people that is going through that, know that I'm sorry. And maybe more importantly, thanks for opting into our small community here and being part of it. I hope we can be a small distraction. And I hope just that this kind of thing can get resolved and we can take real action to making sure it never happens again. I hate Ryan for the fact that my kid has to go through active shooter drills at his school, right? That's a awful situation that I never had to deal with growing up. Yeah, if we can just be a small distraction, great. But yeah, you never know who you interface with. It's very possible you and I have interfaced with someone, and we do know that we've interfaced with someone that's been impacted by this tragedy. Yeah, it just all around sucks.
It does. And again, I don't know that I have much to add. I'm not a parent. I know that this was something that hit you and so many other people very close to home. So we're very appreciative of our little community here, of which, on a little bit of a self-deprecating note here, Luke, I'll say that before the game on Thursday night, I ran into quite a few listeners walking between the media entrance and then out in front of Mariucci. And I think you'll enjoy this little story in terms of so I'm standing up there on the stage, and we have a listener come up and say, "Hey, you look slim. You're looking great." I'm thinking, boy, that was nice of him. He didn't have to say that. And then you'll like this. I immediately get off the stage, go behind it, and I have a woman come up to me. And she says, "Hey, I'm a listener." I go, well, thank you very much. And she goes, "I thought you had lost weight." And I went, I have. And she went, and then just walked away. Look, I'm not looking for compliments. That's not the point of this. But I sometimes wonder through life in moments like that where it's like I've never met that woman in my entire life. And I'm probably never will again. And I don't know if she's listening right now or what the situation is going to be. But I cannot imagine walking up to someone who I don't know and then just being like, and then literally turning their back and walking away. I was thinking to myself, boy, Luke is going to love that story whenever we record that.
I just love the...
Anytime we can get shots in at me, that's what I'm here for, baby.
Just,
I cannot stress to you how the eyes, like, she clearly went up, down, and went, walked away.
What is that social?
Welcome to the opener. Welcome to the. We talked about it leading into this game, Luke.
Yeah, openers are weird.
Interaction about sums up what is essentially week zero, week one, whatever you want to call it, the opening weekend. It's weird. It's just like people forget how to do things. They forget social interactions. That's how Minnesota can put up 443 total yards and only score 23 points, which
that's our
greatest accomplishment from that game, is how they somehow only put up 23 points, which we'll spend a lot of time getting into. But it was just I knew it was going to be weird, but you never know how it's going to be. Like, the weird can only encompass so much, but you don't know what flavor it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it was it almost looked like it just wasn't meant to be Minnesota's night with the Drake Lindsay interception, of which I've watched football for a very long time, and I know a lot of listeners have as well. I've never seen that before in my entire life.
Can we actually just talk about that play real quick?
Sure.
Like, not that we're gonna know, and maybe. Drake actually said, was he trying to throw that ball away by chance?
No, he went through his reads, which there were two cross country routes going on. They hit the X, and then he knew his check down was going to be open because of that, in theory, on paper. And what had happened was, when Jameson Gears gets out in the flat there, he sees the linebacker on his right, notes him, but then when he turns
he got chucked.
His head,
yeah.
Yeah, he gets shoved, destroyed, which is legal, because it's within five yards of the line.
It was totally legal. Yeah.
But it was like essentially the moment that Drake was about to release it, he's like, uh-oh. And it hits the underside of the cleat, bounces perfectly into the hands of the linebacker, of which I can about guarantee you, if you are a high school football coach in the state of Minnesota, or if you are a high school football coach of which is a Gopher fan, the first thing they're going to show their high school football team on Sunday or Monday is the effort play made by then Darius Taylor, who's going to be playing in the NFL very soon, chasing the linebacker down 45 yards down the field, which is an under-talked about part of this game from what I've seen about the conversation thus far, because it saved 4 points.
Yeah.
If he doesn't make the effort play to lay out to get a shoestring tackle, that game would have been very different. Instead, Buffalo implodes offensively like they did most of the night, is forced to kick a field goal. Just one of those plays where even Fleck talked about it afterwards too, where he saw that happen and he said in the headset, this might not be our night. And luckily for Minnesota, they finally got one to break through offensively in the fourth quarter, but just a strange, strange deal. And that play about encapsulates week one in college football.
Yeah, it was really odd. Okay, let's actually get into this game. First, again, the score was 23-10. I want to call out that Carl Anderson tweeted, Carl Anderson of Gopher Athletics Communications. He tweeted that this is number, 570 in terms of unique scores. Ryan, it was a score NAMI, 23-10. Minnesota has played 1,334 all-time games, and this happened to be yet again another Scornami, which literally shocked me that 23-10 was a Scornami.
It's just like every opening game is just some random debauchery of a score. Like, what was it last year? 19-17?
Yeah, and by the way, it's Scoragami. I always mispronounce that.
It is Scoragami. But that's Scoragami. Even why in my prediction I picked something absurd like 27-16, of which that would be an under, and that's a Buffalo cover. That line should have never been 17 points. Now, Minnesota had an opportunity to take this thing and run away a few different times, and they didn't do it, which we'll get into here in a second. But it's just opening games for this offense just continue to be like, how did we only score this amount of points with this amount of total yards?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Okay, so maybe get into this. We'll talk about when the Gophers were on offense maybe first. On the day, the debut for Drake Lindsay, 19 of 35 for two touchdowns and that one interception we already referred to. I thought he was pretty solid. Let's talk rushing the ball. Darius Taylor had 30 carries for, let me look at, I'm looking at the wrong page, sorry. He had 30 carries for 141 yards, a 4.7 yard average. And then you did have a host of others get carries, including Jameson Gears, which was odd on that tush push, I'm sure we'll get to later. AJ Turner and Cam Davis as well. And then the ball was really spread around. The receivers didn't have a great overall day in terms of cleanliness, let's say. Jalen Smith led the way in yardage with 76 yards. He had two receptions and a touchdown, the long of 60 there. And then Javon Tracy had three receptions for 71 yards. And Gears had led everybody with four receptions, as well as Darius Taylor with four receptions. All in all, the distribution to the receivers was really good, and Coy Parrish let it all off.
Yeah, the Coy Parrish, the first completion of the Drake Lindsay era is to Coy Parrish, of all people.
Yeah.
And do you know how many snaps Coy Parrish ended up playing offensively Thursday night?
I don't. I'd probably guess about seven.
You are right on the numbers.
Really?
Seven.
Okay.
Yeah, we talked about coming into this game, or at least I had hypothesized. I know Grimm had set the line at 18, and when I told him I'm taking way under.
Oh, yeah.
Per game, he was very surprised by that, I know. And it turns out in the opening game, it was seven. Now, Coy Parrish also played 100% of the snaps defensively. Mm-hmm. He played 100% of the snaps on kick return and punt return, of which on kick return now, look, I don't want to – we're going to save special teams,
mm-hmm,
because I actually have positive things to say, because like we talked about coming into the season, I've turned a new page. I was optimistic, and game one was a good story.
Yeah, new year, new you.
I don't know how – I think maybe one of the biggest takeaways I have from this first game is Drake Lindsay has a chance to be pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And he was very good in his first career start on Thursday night, of which featured five drops. And if you just catch the football, Drake Lindsay on opening night would have completed 68% of his passes for over 300 yards, multiple touchdowns. Like, what? The bar too clear for first starts as a Golden Gopher quarterback was already exponentially low over the years. But to see Greg Harbaugh, the offensive coordinator, dropping back 38 times, and Drake Lindsay, outside of a couple plays before halftime, of which he would love to have back, and then a couple of plays in the fourth quarter, where if you were watching it live or on TV, whatever it may be, you will have noticed that Fleck made him sprint all the way over to the sidelines in the fourth quarter. You want to guess why, Luke Buehr?
No, I don't have a clue.
Because he thought Drake Lindsay was leaving too much time on the plate. Like, he was snapping.
Oh, okay, sure.
And Minnesota wanted him to snap it with 2 or 3 seconds left, if not one. And then you had those couple of throws before the end of the first half where that's a freshman in his first start right there, where he gets bailed out, that Jalen Smith plays a little bit of defense, and then he can't take a sack there,
mm-hmm,
of which Fleck had some very strong words of encouragement from watching that one from the press box live, and Lindsay took it in stride. If that's the floor for Drake Lindsay, of which he showed composure, he showed poise, he showed a very, I continue to call it a low pulse, of which he didn't seem sped up for 95% of the game, which for a freshman quarterback making his first career start, I don't know what else you can really ask for here, because he was making some throws, even the first third down of the game where Jalen Smith bobbled it. That's a far hash to near sideline throw that was an absolute dot. Like, that was a, you can't throw that ball any better.
Right.
And it's unfortunate that there was a double clutch there, but that is what I come away from this game thinking, is the drumbeat all offseason had been Drake Lindsay looks pretty dang good in practices. I saw it with my own two eyes. I've seen Gopher quarterbacks of yesteryear, and it's one game. We've talked about how trying to react, but not overreact or underreact. But this has been the consistent message from so many people, as this is what Drake Lindsay has looked like for now 8 months. So for him to come out and do it when the lights are on and the TV cameras are rolling and there's 50,000 people in the stadium, I'm going to take that as a sign of very good news to come, Luke Buehr.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, the counting stats were good that I already listed off, but the advanced stats were actually pretty solid as well. His EPA was 10.05. His win percentage added was 3%. He was probably the most important player, even including Darius Taylor, like, to be completely honest. Darius Taylor probably added more. He did add more on the win percentage added, but he didn't have as high an expected points added. So, and none of these metrics are perfect, right? But you have to take this with the eye test, and at least from the eye test, you can see the potential, right? He's big. He has a big arm to go with being big. He, for the most part, felt the pocket okay. To your point, taking the sack was bad. But, you know, he is a redshirt freshman, so you're going to see him, you should see him improve. And the numbers really could have been better, to your point, if they could make some catches and, you know, not catch it against their body, use their hands in some instances for certain guys.
I've got some thoughts on some receivers. But the other thing I would note here with Drake is 38 dropbacks, like I mentioned, 35 actual pass attempts.
Mm-hmm.
His average depth of target on 35 passing attempts. Now, for those of you who need a refresher course on what ADOT means, average depth of target, it's how far down the field did the ball travel in the air. On 35 attempts, Luke, he had an 11-yard ADOT. Yeah. Which would have been top four of any Big Ten quarterback last year if you look at it over a much bigger sample size, which is an entire season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's one game, but if this doesn't signify to you that the offensive coordinator believes in him, and I would also be remiss, Luke, if I didn't share the one thought that Derek Burns shared with me, because it's a great point. I don't know that fans really understand how far we've come as a Gopher football offense from 4 years ago, when it was the Kirk Shiraka check with me to the sideline RPO.
Mm-hmm.
And now you get to watch. I mean, it went from, especially in game one, I've watched so many Gopher football offenses in the non-conference run inside mid zone, outside zone, and then like two passing plays. On the first like 10, 12 plays of the drive, we saw a Jameson Gears tush push. We saw a lot more under center than what we've seen here historically. Mm-hmm. We saw Darius Taylor and Coy Parrott in the Wildcat. I mean, there it went from we're going to show you nothing to we're going to show you everything. So now that you have to spend more time in your week preparing for the weird things that we might do, and just to be able to see this offense and to see Drake make checks at the line of scrimmage like you see many quarterbacks do on Sundays. I mean, that's what gives me hope, is the way that they trust Drake to make run game identifications, of which as you continue to watch throughout the season, you'll see Drake's the one making audibles or run game adjustments at the line of scrimmage. I don't know many redshirt freshmen that are doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that to go on top of his physical attributes, I mean, that's the mental side of things that has me believing that this is sustainable, that this is going to be the biggest difference from what we thought Ethan Calliope-McManus could be 2 years ago, 3 years ago, is the processing ability for him upstairs, or even on the long touchdown to Jalen Smith. Buffalo is down a touchdown. Their defensive coordinator, who I think is a very good, I mean, I was very impressed with that Buffalo defense, by the way.
Yes.
The first to tell you, I am now the captain of the Red Murdoch fan club. Not only is it an outstanding football name that should be appearing on a Key and Peele sketch near you, number two for Buffalo flew around the field.
Yeah.
And I figured out very, very quickly, even for someone like me, why that young man was second in all of college football in tackles, because he flies around with physicality and speed. He was so much fun to watch, to be quite honest. I think he's going to be one of the best linebackers that comes through this stadium this season. I mean, I don't want to exaggerate that, but that's how highly I think Red Murdoch is as a linebacker. But on the Drake Lindsey touchdown pass to Jalen Smith, six come. You didn't see he knew it was coming, and we've seen so many inexperienced quarterbacks just when they see it coming, they panic, they tuck the ball, and they take the sack, or they tuck the ball and just run. They don't keep their eyes down the field. go back and watch that play, or go to Gopher Illustrated and watch the GIF rewind. His eyes stay down the field the whole time. He navigates out to his right, doesn't get sped up, and then he leads Jalen Smith perfectly, and you're able to see that young man from Mankato West speed. I am trying to contain my excitement, knowing that, it's one game of data against a MAC opponent, and you're going to see a lot more, I would say, talented players consistently, even though, again, I think that Buffalo defense is nothing to scoff at.
Yeah.
But I think Drake has got a shot, and that is something I don't know that I've said about too many Gopher quarterbacks over the last 15 years outside of just a few, and I think he's got a shot.
Okay, just some quick hitting comments. To your point earlier about seeing multiple personnel groups and formations and stuff, totally agree with that take. Also, I think we are completely past the any remnants of a Kirk Sharaka offense. There was no remnants at all, as far as I could see. Obviously, you can run RPO, like, but they're not.
Read the entire game, of which you can see pretty quickly. Drake Lindsey can move in the pocket just fine, but he's not.
No,
I mean, he's not going to win many foot races, and that's not a strength. But like, it's fascinating for me to see, because Greg Harbaugh and Kirk Sharaka were so close for so many years. I mean, Harbaugh was Sharaka's guy. And the ability to see him kind of put his own stamp on the offense, of which I'll continue to say, I talked to him about it this offseason, is his two favorite play callers to watch that he gets ideas from are Liam Cohen, who used to be, last season he was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive coordinator. I think he's the head coach of the Saints now.
Okay.
But you remember what he did last season with Bucky Irving and Baker Mayfield, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, all those guys. It was an explosive offense. And then this young man for the Chicago Bears, who's now the head coach, and Ben Johnson, and what he did with the Detroit Lions. So two guys who put a lot on their quarterbacks. You know that Minnesota did that last year with Brosmer. So it is certainly a much different quarterback than they've recruited historically. I mean, Max Brosmer and Drake Lindsey are a little bit different in that, where I think Harbaugh really prioritizes the mental side of things. It just happens to be that Drake's also 6'5" and has a good arm, which is hopefully going to be a good thing for Minnesota. But it is fascinating to kind of see the differences and similarities from two guys who were so close for so long in Sharaka and Harbaugh.
Yeah, for sure. Then additionally, just some observations on the advanced stats. The Gophers ran 78. They ran 78 scrimmage plays. They possessed the ball for 38 minutes and 28 seconds. They had a 44% successful plays, meaning they had greater than an EPA of zero, so greater than zero expected points added. They only ended up with, by game on papers numbers, this is where I get a lot of these advanced stats, they only had three explosive plays, which they define as EPA greater than 2.4 when passing. They had two of those, and then they had one rushing when the EPA is greater than 1.8. Now, that doesn't mean that there weren't more explosive plays, but those are that's one way to define explosive plays and what they use. And then I wanted to comment on the touchdown to Jalen Smith. You know, often I think we talk about how, Ryan, explosive plays are a function of like somebody just making a play. I think very often explosive plays are, the real reality is the offense is exploiting the defense in a certain way, and everybody has to do their job. And that's really what I thought happened on that specific play. And we've historically talked a ton about how the Gophers need to generate explosive plays. Sometimes the Gophers just need to execute. And there were times again yesterday, and we'll get into this more, where if they just execute, they probably score another 14 to, you know, 17 points, a floor of probably six, right? But you do get that explosive play because everybody did their job. You know, they picked up the blitz. Lindsey was able to evade the blitz, buy a little bit of time, and then now you've got numbers. I think they jumped on Jameson Gears, and then Jalen Smith slips behind, and then it's off to the races, right? Everybody did their job.
It's a tight end of which Minnesota had been targeting early and often. They've had a lot of success early. So when the play side safety saw Drew Bibber, Minnesota tight end, kind of essentially run a little hook there, he's going to bite down because he knows Drake has targeted the tight ends. Well, guess what? Coming in behind him, he took the bait, and behind him is a wide open streaking receiver of which Lindsey can't throw that ball any better. So, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of adjustment you want to see. I mean, there was also talk about coming into the week that Buffalo last year, what they did last year with nine returning starters plus their defensive coordinator was essentially completely different from what they ran defensively in terms of schemes and coverages. They were basically a cover three team last year. You barely saw that at all on Thursday night, which is part of what makes opening games weird is you don't have any tape on how this team likes to deploy their talent against what you like to do, which is why by late September and further on, games become more evenly matched in terms of there's not a lot of surprises schematically anymore.
Yeah.
But in the opening game, there always is. So, getting back to the pass catching core, I think that's also one of my biggest takeaways. And I want to see if this continues, or maybe it was just a bad night.
Right.
But there were five bad drops. And if you are going to, and on those five drops, I mean, I guess the one to Frank Bierman, the flat was high, but the Jameson Gears ones are just killer. And I feel for him because I actually talked about it with a couple of people in the press box where I feel like people don't give Jameson Gears enough credit because he had some horrible red marks against him last year where it was the fumble against Rutgers or the drop against UCLA on that first drive. But then they're also quick to forget he's the guy who scored the game-winning touchdown against Illinois.
Yeah.
Trick play touchdown against Penn State.
Yeah.
With a 50-50 ball against Wisconsin. Like, he has good moments, and you saw that in the first 20 minutes of the game where he has four receptions for 38 yards, and I think all four receptions essentially resulted in a first down or a touchdown, of which he makes a great catch. And then he has that stretch in the third quarter where he just drops the gimmies.
Yep.
And it kills me as a former collegiate tight end because it's like the ones that you're supposed to catch. And it's not as, I guess, in theory, as much concentration because it should just come second nature. Those are the easy ones where maybe you get your eyes down the field or you're thinking in the back of your head, I can turn it up and get some extra yards after contact, whatever it may be. He needs to put it together consistently.
Yep.
He has a great start, and then he has the third quarter like he has, and it's unfortunate because from what I've seen from reaction on Gopher Illustrated and from, again, talking to the people on my message board and just fans after the game in general, all people want to talk about is the drops where I'm like, we also got to mention the first 20 minutes too where he was really good.
Yeah.
Part of why the offense was actually moving the ball.
I haven't been on Gopher Illustrated in – because of traveling and all these things. But you know what I wrote in my notes from this game?
What's up?
So you always ask me the goofy question, so I'm going to ask you a goofy question.
Oh, boy.
Can you name a Gopher receiver that really can make some tough catches, but for some reason, like, it seems like they might drop some of the easy ones?
Tyler Johnson,
definitely. Yeah, that's exactly what I wrote down. I said, is Jameson Gears Tyler Johnson just a tight end?
Yeah, where he can make the difficult ones
look easy, right? Like,
yeah, and it's an unfortunate trend that at least in the first game, which I'll be the first one to remind you, it's only 8.5% of the season. We only have 8.5% of the data.
For
but
sure.
But it's a continuation on last season, which isn't...
That's the hard part.
That you want to see. So the hope would be throughout the rest of what is going to be September, the concentration drops seem to go away.
To the other drops, right? I don't want to be hard on Jalen Smith because I think he's got a bright future ahead of him. But I wrote down in my notes, Ryan, like, he is catching the ball with his body, and this is a worrisome thing to me. And that, to me, was partly why I think he ended up dropping those, because you have to kind of bobble it to secure it, right, in your hands. There's an opportunity for growth for him there.
I would just say not everybody can be Drake Lindsay with, like, composure and poise in their first game.
100%.
And I feel like Jalen Smith's night was eyes wide open, where he'd never caught a pass in his entire collegiate career yet. And he went from playing a few snaps in the bowl game as a run guy to here's over 50% of the snaps, and we're going to feed you a team leading 9 targets.
Yes.
I mean, to me, that speaks volumes about what I had been trying to say this entire preseason and offseason of the staff really believes in Jalen Smith. And getting open is not an issue for him, whereas for some other receivers, as you will talk about, I think it's a bigger issue, and that to me is more worrisome. But throughout fall camp and throughout the spring, I would say I didn't think Jalen Smith had a body-catching issue. I saw him make enough catches away from his body. I just think he got in his own head, and that's okay.
Yeah,
it's his first career start, his first career meaningful game at the collegiate level. And he needs to gain some confidence. And so that's where I was happy to have him catch the long one. And then you're able to see after he secures it, and if there's green ahead of him, he's got some speed to, if he gets green, he can house it very, very quickly.
Yeah, there's absolutely no question.
He needs to secure the ball better on the one on the sideline and then the one across the middle, of which I know some fans are trying to tell me that's targeting. Here's my response is, for the amount of reviews that we had on Thursday night, which was nauseating, it was a first, you could tell it was the first game for the refereeing crew as well. They looked at that play to see if it was a completion or incompletion. And that's a ball that should be caught. And yes, it's two guys colliding on him and it's a tough catch. But how do you review it for complete or incomplete, but not for targeting? That's my qualm here, is if we're already spending 3 minutes back at the studios looking at that, why not also look at it for targeting? So, yeah, for Jalen Smith, it's just consistency. And I'm not going to tell you that it's going to be, he's going to be the next Rashad Bateman or Corey Davis, even though I think he's got a shot to be a very, very good player. But he's got to just gain some confidence. And hopefully that touchdown in the second half is one that can set him up for something here against Northwestern State.
Yeah. Anything else you want to hit on receiving wise? Otherwise, we got to get to the run game.
So just a few notes on a few different guys here. I know I had been getting a lot of questions about, people are infatuated with the Christian Driver situation, of which there's had to be a rumor going around somewhere on the interwebs that Christian Driver, something happened. I saw Christian Driver on the field in a jersey, and he was listed as out on the injury report. I have nothing further to say other than he's still on the team. And I know he obviously wasn't at the last media practice, which I think is the ball that got this rolling downhill. But he was out there. I don't know what the situation is. And when there's more clarity to it, I'm sure he'll be the one to bring more eyes to the situation. But Christian Driver is still on the team, yes. The other one I got was, where is Malachi Coleman? And I think we talked about even 6 months ago when Minnesota got him out of the transfer portal that he is very, very raw. And I think towards the tail end of camp, at least with my own two eyes, I'll say, it felt like he was hitting a little bit of a wall where he was going against some players from Minnesota that are in the Rofers, which is the second and third team community. And he wasn't winning consistently. So he's not going to get reps over Jalen Smith, Lemeke Brockington, Javon Tracy. So maybe as the year goes on, he develops into a role, but that's why he didn't get snaps. I'll say this with your boy Lemeke Rocketship. He's going to have a role in every single game, and because he is their best run blocker.
Yes.
And he's got freaky talents in terms of athletics. That's why he was on Bruce Feldman's freaks list. I just think he fights the ball too much, and I don't think he's a guy that you can target 6 to 10 times a game and feel good about it. Now, you want to run behind him, but I don't know that I see a lot of ceiling there in his potential final season. You saw Logan Loya, the UCLA transfer, only play in three receiver sets, essentially, which was interesting. Because you saw Minnesota play a lot of 12 personnel, aka tight ends, on Thursday night, which meant they didn't think that outside of, I think, just a few snaps that Logan Loya should be on the field. So I think if Minnesota elects to go to a one tight end look, which would mean three receivers, you'll see more Logan Loya. But as they're searching for consistent pass catchers, I think Logan Loya would be somebody I'd potentially look to. Second to last note here, Luke, and I feel kind of bad for saying this, and I don't mean it to come off as disrespectful, just to be clear here, okay? Respectfully. Kenrick Lanier played 28 snaps and got zero targets. My man out there running wind sprints. He's out here getting conditioning in.
Yeah.
He's out here run blocking. Like, I feel for him that 28 offensive snaps at receiver and zero targets is a tough way to put your head on the pillow at night.
Yeah.
And then go ahead. Finally, Javon Tracy. To me, he's a guy that you look at from this game. He's three catches for 71 yards. He gets that catch near midfield and somehow wiggles out of five Buffalo defenders to get an extra 15 yards.
I literally said, go down. But
He showed you, Luke.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he's somebody that probably has earned more playing time. But you can see that Matt Simon is trying to figure out who can be consistent because they miss Daniel Jackson. They miss Elijah Spencer. And they need guys that consistently catch the football because Dre can get it there. He can get it there. But who can catch the football is something that they need to learn here through Northwestern State, Cal, and into the Rutgers game.
Yeah, I talk about this a lot through the years. They targeted nine guys, eight with receptions, right? I like that distribution. Conversely, you look at Buffalo, and it's a totally different story. They targeted four guys. I think you reasonably could have targeted 11 guys in this game. So I like that distribution. Keep showing them teams a lot and what to prepare for. It will be interesting. I think there's opportunity for growth. The execution wasn't flawless in the past game. And I would say it was more on the receivers than it was on Drake. One thing I did like is you did see a number of guys running open in key spots. Yes, there were some drops, but that was a welcome sign for sure.
Yeah, and then when we get to the running game, do you want to start with the tailbacks or you want to start with the Minnesota Moving Company?
Let's start with the Moving Company and then to the tailbacks, but just some counting stats real quick. On the day, the Gophers rushed the ball 44 times. At the end of the day, rushing is always going to be the identity of a PJ Fleck-led team. I think I guess they'll probably throw it, especially if they're behind, but they will continue to find ways as a team to have their identity be running. Early Ryan, it was kind of a struggle, right? But eventually when they needed to, they were able to do that. I miscounted on the counting stats, by the way. They rushed it. Yeah, they did rush it 44 times for 153 yards. That ends up being a 3.5 yard average. If you look at Darius Taylor on the day, he was by far their best rusher without question. He had 30 carries for 141 yards, a 4.7 yard average with a long of 18. AJ Turner got six carries. Cam Davis got four. As someone who's watched Cam Davis, that is exactly who Cam Davis is, and he very clearly is the third down back so far in this early part of the season. But yeah, let's talk about the Minnesota Moving Company. I think the most encouraging thing is when you needed to run the ball, Ryan, they did. They were able to salt and run the ball.
I'm trying to figure out if I want to have this be my soapbox or if I want to actually talk about the running game before I get on the soapbox and then come back to it. Here's what I'll say. is Darius Taylor himself ran for 141 yards mm-hmm. on Thursday night. The previous two openers combined, Minnesota tailbacks against Nebraska and North Carolina, had run for 134 yards combined. Do you think they missed Darius Taylor?
Yeah, exactly.
Future NFL guy who wasn't healthy last year and wasn't a part of the plans yet 2 years ago. Darius Taylor earned everything he got because he took some hits, boy. And he was incredibly physical. I thought he was very patient. He made a lot out of nothing. Had some nice catches there. Just as gritty of 141 yards as I can remember. With AJ Turner, he was very close a couple of times.
Yep.
And there's a couple of runs I think he's going to wish he had back. One was in the second quarter where it turned out to be a four-yard gain. I think they're near the 25, 30-yard line, second down, going into the open end zone. And he just hits the hole too hard, which how do you tell a guy to slow down? But if he slows down just a half a percentile, he sees that if he just waits for the block ahead of him instead of burying his head there at Mach 10, he can bounce it to the right. He can just slide step to the right, and he's going to be one-on-one with a safety and two blockers on two blockers. Plus, I think this is also a great opportunity. I'll put on my Derek Burns hat here to teach a little bit about a first down run versus a third down run for AJ Turner. Where you mentioned that final drive, that 16-play drive that encapsulated, I think it was the final 9 minutes and 45 seconds of the game. There was a third down run that A.J. Turner had where you saw Nathan Roy, the left tackle, pull out into space looking very agile, very athletic, of which that gave me a lot of hope there that they've got something there in Nathan Roy to see him get out into space and make it look very easy. But he plants his left foot and gets north-south to get the first down. That's exactly what a running back should do on a third and four situation, go get the first down. But I also think this other statement can be true within that. I would have loved to have seen that play called on a first down. Why do I say that? Because if A.J. Turner does what A.J. Turner does best, and when you watch his tape at Marshall, you know it's get into space, turn a corner, and turn on the Jets. And I think if that would have been a first or a second down run and he goes outside of his blockers there, which I believe were Nathan Roy and Frank Bierman, I don't know if he would have been caught. But I also understand he had to plant his foot there to get north-south to get the first down because that's what the team needed. Does that make sense with that, what I'm trying to explain here?
Yeah, you know, you'll often hear people say, like, man, good to see him hit the hole hard. Yes, there is some good. There is some good to that, but there can be some bad, right? Yes, I get what you're saying. And yes, there's a time and a place for it. It's situational football, right?
Yeah, and the other part that I don't even think you know this yet, because again, you've had a long day, but the most interesting part of consternation. Or just like strained, I think this is very strange to be upset about from last night, was the final drive, of which I don't know if maybe it's because I've been around Fleck this last month especially and been talking to him about like how do you become better in one possession games, and he talked about being able to put a game away at the end. It's something that they have struggled to do since Mohamed Ibrahim was the tailback.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think back to that 2023 Northwestern game where they're up 21 points to start the fourth quarter and
lose. Right.
Why? Because they couldn't run the ball in sustained drives. They haven't been able to do that to salt away a game outside of, I think that what was the, it was at Camp Randall last year. They ended up kicking a field goal. I think it was like a 12-play drive, but nothing like the 16, like this. It was very Big Ten West-esque. Now, again, I enunciated that horribly, and I know there's some people chuckling in their car to that. Big Ten West-esque. I mean, if you weren't yearning for the legends and the leaders after something like that, I don't know if you're a college football fan. But here's the source of the consternation, of which I am not on this train, but I'm going to give you the opportunity to give your opinion before I give mine. People didn't like that Darius Taylor was featured on that drive. He got into that drive, just for context here, Darius Taylor had 18 carries and Drake Lindsey had 35 dropbacks. So we talk about balance, and by the end of the game, it was balanced, but Minnesota had certainly dropped back to pass more than they had been running the football. But I even got into some interactions on Twitter today, or even on Gopher Illustrated, just being about why. All right. Let me throw it to you before I get up on my soapbox. Does it bother you that Darius Taylor is the one who got a bulk of those touches? Because I will also remind the listeners that A.J. Turner and Cam Davis got carries on that drive as well. But it seems to bother people that it was 12 touches for him there. What do you, how does that entire thing sit with you?
It doesn't surprise me given PJ's history. Second, no, it didn't bother me. I would hope that, you know, the Darius, it looks like he subbed himself out a couple times, even on that drive. He's going to come back out if he thinks he can play, and he should. And it really didn't surprise me that that's what PJ went for, you know, basically trying to bleed the clock out and not scoring. No, it doesn't bother me. It didn't surprise me. I will say it would really bug me if next week he ends up with 30 carries.
Well, yeah. And so that's kind of my point with this whole thing is I feel like there's a lot of people getting upset about a hypothetical of which I don't believe will happen, which is next week it's Northwestern State. What do you need to see Darius Taylor for more than, say, 12 carries? And even then, why does he need 12 carries against a horrible football team? But so just for context, we can go back over this whole Darius Taylor thing, because I still think people have stuck in their head that Fleck and Harbaugh run their tailbacks like Kirk Sciarca used to do with Mohamed Ibrahim. So answer me this, Luke Buehr. I actually went back and looked into this, because if I'm going to have an argument, I better have data behind it, or what's the point of this? Ready for this?
Yeah.
How many games last year did Darius Taylor have 20 or more carries?
So there's 12 games. He played in 11.
He played in 12 games last year. Oh, yeah. I'll remind people, he played in 12 consecutive games last year. He was not injured outside of a hamstring tweak in the opener.
I would say probably 7.
4 games.
4. Jeez, I'm close.
4 games last season of which he had 20 carries or more. Now, right, yes, I know that then there's some guy in the back of the room saying, "But Ryan, he had 52 catches, you moron." Yeah, in the ghost of Chuck Rios. Okay, first of all, Chuck Rios is still with us. I want to make sure the pride of Little Canada here gets his due. I'm well aware they featured him plenty in the passing game. Okay, but they also only had one game last season of which he got 30 or more carries.
Yeah.
And so if the argument, it seems to be centered around, we'll find out what you have in Cam Davis and A.J. Turner and Femi Ejiboy. I think the part where the disconnect really comes for me is I feel like fans or listeners or whoever it may be are not putting enough stock into how much college football coaches want to learn about their team if they can salt the game away. Like Fleck loves to play trestle ball. He's always done that for his entire existence at Western Michigan, at Minnesota. And if you're going to play trestle ball, when you get the ball back with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter in a two-possession game, you got to find out if you can do what essentially they haven't been able to do in the Greg Harbaugh offensive coordinator era.
Mm-hmm.
They've done it once, maybe twice. And the only time I can really think of before this game, in, like I said, in the 2023, 2024, and now 2025 era, is the what they did against Wisconsin, where they were able to kick the field goal in the fourth quarter. They went 16 plays. Yeah, Darius took some hits, but also Darius Taylor has had 8 months to recover. Darius Taylor now gets to play Northwestern State next week, of which, to your point, Luke, if Darius Taylor, for some unknown reason, gets 20 carries next week, I will come on this podcast 7 days from now and step up on my soapbox and get and start preaching about what in the world are we doing. I just don't think people realize in most of the games last year, and especially in the Laffers in the non-conference last year, Darius had like 12 carries. Why are we acting like that's not the most recent data set here? Or why are we acting like he didn't just get 8 months off? Like he didn't, this isn't the Rutgers game last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where the previous week against Illinois, Darius had, I think, 35-ish touches between receptions and carries. Okay. Well, this isn't Illinois hitting him. And then he has to got to go play Rutgers. He's not going to play that much next week. He essentially gets 15 days to prepare for Cal after not getting hit a ton over the previous 8 months. And then what comes after the California Berkeley game, Mr. Luke Buehr?
Is it a bye?
It is a bye week.
Yeah.
Like what? I don't understand some of the consternation with this. And maybe again, it's just me wanting to be mad because people love rage baiting me and I am susceptible to taking the low hanging fruit. I understand that. I just think they were able to finally do something of which they haven't been able to do. They had a 16 play drive that was essentially all on the ground. And that's important to learn about your football team. That's mm-hmm. important to learn with a brand new offensive line. Can they do that? Well, apparently they can. And here's the thing that I also think isn't resonating. We don't even know if that, I think it's going to be valuable, Luke, but we're also talking hypothetical. When there's a situation that comes up, and I'm sure it will before Halloween, whether it's against Rutgers, whether it's against Cal Berkeley, whether it's against Nebraska, there's going to be a game of which Minnesota's got a 3-7 point lead with 7 minutes left, and they need to say, let's run this thing out. Well, guess what? Now they can say, let's do it like we did in Buffalo and go just play downhill football. They have something to resonate back to. Will that be meaningful? I have no idea. Neither do you. But at least that this is something that I know this staff specifically, and it's a talking point from Fleck, just to me in the last in his last press conference before Buffalo, because I asked him, I said, you stunk in one possession games last year. Oh, well, here, let me get this correct, or else I'm going to get a phone call from the university, from some folks over in that building. I said, you were 3-4 in one possession games last year. To me, that's mediocre. You're below 500. 19, you were 6-1. How do you get more towards that, or at least break even in one possession games? And one of the first things out of the head coach's mouth was, we need to get better in 4 minute and putting games away.
Yep.
That's why Darius Taylor took the extra 12 hits. I will also say, I don't think Darius Taylor comes back after the season. And no, he's not transferring to the University of Michigan, some random fan will tell me, for the fourth straight year. Because I think Darius Taylor's special enough where if he continues to play like he did on Thursday night, he's probably going to be in the NFL. So if he's not going to get a lot of touches next week, and he didn't get touches for the last 8 months, and in 16 days there's another bye week, if a running back gets hurt, he gets hurt. Let's not live in the hypothetical. Can you tell this one's been eating at me today, by the way? You know how I love to do this.
Yeah, I can tell. We're at 57 minutes, and we haven't even gotten to the defense yet, or the offensive line, for that matter. Let's talk about offensive line real quick. This is obviously a new group, right? Greg Johnson moves from center to guard. Ashton Beers moves from guard to center. You got some new names. You got a freshman left tackle with braids that people
pigtails to you, of which
pigtails, braids, whatever.
Left tackle Nathan Roy with pigtails in the first half, essentially, or braids, however you want to distinguish them. He did take them out at halftime, I will note.
Yeah.
Welcome to this day and age of young men. I'll say that.
Okay, but this is a group. I alluded to this earlier, but didn't seem to get a ton of push early. A lot of yards were gained after contact, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're able to salt away a victory with an 8 minute drive where you kneel on it at the end. They also were able to pick up some blitzes and some stunts. It wasn't perfect, but it wasn't terrible.
We've seen a lot worse openers from an offensive line, especially one with five new starters. My opinion is I think the left side of the line is going to be the strength compared to the right side of the line, which is going to be a little surprising to some people because the right side of the line has a combined, I think, 3,500 collegiate snaps under its belt already, while Nathan Roy just made his first career start at left tackle. Greg Johnson's played a lot of football, but I think the athleticism on the left side of the line is going to be a lot of fun to watch. I mean, I think Greg Johnson climbed to the second level as much as I saw a Minnesota guard all of last season.
And also got held.
I can confirm that was another thing I noted was the Buffalo defensive line was the one holding Minnesota's offensive line in a few different plays. I highlighted it in my GIF rewind. That's something I haven't seen very often. I know Minnesota's going to be sending some plays in to the Big Ten to say, make sure your referees are watching this. But I think Ashton Beers was fine at center. I think Marshall and Ray were just all right. Again, I have higher expectations for those two guys because they've played 3-4 years in college already. I wouldn't be surprised to see Khalid Tafai start to mix in at right tackle potentially starting here in Northwestern State. But I think the offensive line did pretty well. Again, we're talking about an offense that, it was 23 points, and I do want to just touch on one final thing, which was the ultimate downfall of the offense, which was their red zone issues on Thursday night, which is how they put up 443 total yards. Okay. They had not put up over 251 in either of the previous two openers under Harbaugh. And their 443 total yards against Buffalo matches their season high from last season when they played Maryland. Do you remember how many points they scored against Maryland?
It was in the 40s, wasn't it?
They scored 48 points on 443 total yards against Maryland.
Yeah.
To only score 23 with the same exact yardage.
It's tough.
It's pretty impressive. Now, it's not a good impressive, but I mean that also comes down to, you know, the red zone issues. And that's where last note with the 443 total yards, there were three other Big Ten teams that played on Thursday night. It was Wisconsin versus Miami of Ohio, Nebraska versus Cincinnati, Rutgers versus Ohio. Minnesota had more yards of total offense than all three of those teams. Yet why they didn't score any more points was, I mean, they were just brutal, brutal in the red zone, which let me run through it here, of which the one play call that is going to come back to me, Luke, that I'm like, Harbaugh, that was, what are we doing? Is the Tush Bush one. I don't care that it was Jamison Gears, of which I'm going to assume that means they just don't want the quarterback to take more hits. My qualm with it is I don't think Harbaugh, I don't know if he knew this or he didn't know that. The graphic said 4th and inches. That was almost 4th and 2. Like, you can't run a Tush Push on a 4th and long one. You got to run Darius Taylor on like an inside zone there. Like, I think that is a call he needs to have back. But you tush push it, you get no points. You get another red zone possession, essentially, where it's the fluke interception at the Buffalo 21-yard line. That's 0 points. You have Drake with a couple of redshirt freshman plays before the end of halftime, which results in a field goal. The first drive of the second half, you get into the red zone, you don't convert, more field goal. And then Jalen Smith can't get his foot down in the back corner of the end zone, and it's another field goal. You have 6 different possessions, of which the final one, I guess you can count it, not count it. I don't know that I necessarily do, because that's the end of the 16-play drive where they just kneel it out at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But it's technically another red zone possession that doesn't get in points. Do you see my theme here, Mr. Buehr?
Well,
do you see my theme?
Let me get to my theme. They struggle to run the ball inside the red zone. Well, and again, they struggled to run the ball outside of the kind of the last drive, at least consistently, right? Now they were having guys run wide open when there's a lot of field behind the defense. But then everything gets compressed, as we've talked about a lot, once you get into the red zone. This is kind of, I do feel like the philosophy from Buffalo was, we're going to take away the run and then bend but don't break, and we'll take our chances in the red zone, right? And they largely did well. What did you notice about the one touchdown that they did get in the red zone?
Their playmakers actually made a play?
Play action.
Yeah.
They need to run more. I am an advocate for more play action in the red zone. One, you have to be able to run the ball with some success, but I do like play action in the red zone, and I do like a quarterback under center in the red zone for that very reason. And that's what you saw in that touchdown play. And there, and again, it's not a like simple like pit, you know, toss and catch, but it was a play, a guy making a play, but it also gave them, again, man coverage, but it gave them that opportunity. And I do think that it helped that they ran play action. But again, hopefully we'll see improvements. Hopefully we'll see more explosive plays. We don't have to worry about the red zone. So,
well, yeah. And it's just like, I mean, that's the big thing is like, you were also 9 of 16 on third down. You had 27 yeah. first downs. It's like that game should have been at least 35 points.
Yeah.
But they weren't, wasn't, because they were so bad in the red zone. Now, is this me saying Minnesota's got a red zone crisis on their hands?
No.
They were just bad in the first game in the red zone. Now, if that continues into October, we'll have so much time to continue to talk about that and kill time on your commute or at the gym or on the lawnmower, whatever it may be. It's just they were bad in the red zone on Thursday night, which is why they didn't score enough points.
All right. I think that's good for offense. We'll catch a quick break, and then we will get to defense and special teams. Once again, Ryan, the Burns Insurance Agency is here to bring you Gopher Gridiron Radio. If you are looking to save, and like, for goodness sake, why wouldn't you want to look to save on something like your auto, home, life insurance, whatever kind of insurance you can get through Burns Insurance? I mean, you should give Bill a call.
You should. And actually, one of the listeners did here since our last podcast. They called him. They were able to switch his home and auto over to the Burns Insurance Agency, which is an independent insurance agency located in the great city of Oakdale, Minnesota. They were able to save that young man $470 annually by getting his home and auto through the Burns Insurance Agency. They are licensed in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Florida, and Utah. So if you're looking to save some money on your home, your auto, your boat, your commercial business, whatever it may be, and you want to support a giant Gopher fan in the same breath, I want you to go to Insurance by Burns, that is BURNS.com, or email him today, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
Hello.
Hey, Dad, just calling again. Want to talk again to you about Blue Horizon Energy. You know, they are a turnkey contractor, kind of like an electrician that can help you with your project to set up solar panel arrays. Tell me again, one of the reasons that you decided to do this project and put the solar panels on the farm.
Yeah, I was very interested in doing the project because we wanted some passive income for the farm. Like, I have a lot of machinery. Let's take our combine. I use it very heavily through the months of September, October, but yet it sits 10 months out of the year. And whereas these panels work for me every day, and I really like that. And also, there's really no maintenance with them. And so they're just there making money for me.
Yeah, so it's a great solution. Put up these solar arrays. These are pivoting solar arrays that you have, and they can make money every single day. If you're interested in learning more about a project with Blue Horizon Energy, just reach out at bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. Again, bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron, and they'll get in touch with you right away. All right, Ryan. Anytime you can hold a college football team to 10 points, it's not a bad day for your defense.
Especially when it's the first game of the full-time Danny Collins era, which, have a day, Daniel. See, it's the 33-year-old. It's the millennial in him that I'm going to chalk this whole thing up to. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think there's something there. Can I just read some of my notes to you?
I I mean, to be honest, that's what you do. That's what puts me to sleep. It's my ASMR before bed. Is Luke Buehr reading off his grocery list that puts me to sleep.
All right. Anthony Smith with a first drive sack makes me feel really good about my first overall pick in the Big Ten Honors Draft.
There were some people very upset with you that you
didn't
pick Pride of Esco. And look at you saying, did you watch Anthony Smith bull rush a 315-pound man 10 yards in the lap of a quarterback? Because Luke Buehr certainly did.
Yeah, and then, I mean, give the man his flowers. He was phenomenal in the game. I think he ultimately ended up with at least 1.5 tackles for loss. I should look that up instead of just assuming that I know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I mean, phenomenal game from him. I thought the defensive line looked really good. The depth maybe wasn't as great, but that starting unit looked great.
It's tough to argue for a defense that played, I believe it was 44 defensive snaps. And I had somebody make the comment to me since the game has ended, of which I wish we would have played more. And I'm thinking to myself, I told them back, no, you don't, because you're going to play enough.
Yeah, exactly.
The schedule starts to get really going where you're playing 60, 70 snaps every week.
Yeah.
But it started up front, and I thought the defensive line was incredibly physical. I think it starts with Anthony Smith, Devin Eastern, and Jalen Logan Redding, of which they set the tone from that opening drive where they didn't allow a Buffalo offensive line, which I'll note returns multiple all-conference starters on. They didn't allow them to really do anything. And that's where Al-J Henderson, a returning 1,000-yard rusher from the MAC, had 11 carries for 25 yards. How does that happen? Starts up front with physicality. I thought Jackson Howard, too, played really well in his first kind of extended opportunity as the guy.
Yes, I'm glad you called that out.
Yeah, I was a little surprised he wasn't wearing a Sully brace, which is a brace that he had on for most of fall camp, which is... As someone who wore a Sully in college, he's probably dealing with some shoulder instability, I would imagine, but he was good enough to go on Thursday night. I think you saw him set an edge incredibly well in the first quarter there that I would imagine is going to be shown in a team meeting. You also saw him hit a spin move on the right tackle, which forced an errant third down throw. I thought Carter Menz had a couple of moments there on his 11 snaps as a pass rusher. I think you can see the type of thing he can provide there. Rushon Lawrence flashed a little bit. It's tough to like really get into the nitty gritty of it, Luke, because we're talking about guys like, say, Carter Menz and Rushon Lawrence played like 11 snaps or 13 snaps, or Anthony Smith led the defensive line with 30 something snaps. These guys didn't get a lot of wear and tear on their bodies, which I'm all for. The healthier Anthony Smith, Devin Eastern, and Jalen Logan Redding are deeper into the season, the better chances of Minnesota winning football games are. But I thought that the first game of the Dennis Dotton Carter era as the defensive line coach was one that certainly left me pretty optimistic against a MAC opponent.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, probably no surprise to anyone. Maverick Baranowski was absolutely everywhere, putting hits on everyone, also getting hit himself. He had 1.5 tackles for loss. The defense had 7 tackles for loss on the day. They had 2 sacks. And Devin Williams, like, you remember when we were talking about Devin Williams, like, man, he looks lost out there. He's grown a ton.
He is the quintessential example. And I know there's always one guy every year. We should call it the Jordan Howden Award of plays too early in his career. And then by the time he's a junior and senior, you're like, okay, I can see why he was signed by a Big Ten program.
Yep.
Arguably, to me, the surprise of the night was how well Maverick Baranowski and Devin Williams played. I mean, they played sensationally.
Yeah.
I think one of the other themes I would note, of which I can't wait to ask Danny Collins about when we get him in the media this week, is do you know how many missed tackles Minnesota had last year? According to Pro Football Focus.
Oh, so many.
I think in the opener against North Carolina last year. Now, it also helps that North Carolina had one of the best tailbacks in college football, who is a first-round draft pick of the, I think it was Los Angeles Chargers, Omarion Hampton.
And probably a sneaky fantasy pick, too.
He's on many of my fantasy teams. How dare you?
turns out he's really good. And all, but again, all Jay Henderson is a guy who's an all-conference player at a group of five. Minnesota, according to Pro Football Focus, missed zero tackles on Thursday night.
Jeez.
Zero. And against North Carolina, I believe Corey Heatherman, because we asked him about him, I think he had Minnesota at 22 missed tackles. And that's part of Fleck's whole bit with the 78% is if you win the 78%, which is, I know fans probably know this better than me at this point because my brain's going. It's missed tackles, it's explosive plays, and I think it's turnovers. So they were even in the turnover battle. Explosive plays, I would say, were roughly even. Well, then guess what? It was missed tackles. Buffalo had 15 missed tackles, according to Pro Football Focus, and Minnesota had zero. And to me, that starts with the play of the linebackers. I just, that was something that is so tough for me as a media member to evaluate in any offseason. And I'm always the first to write this. If you've ever read one of my practice reports on Gopher Illustrated, is when the media comes to practice, we rarely see tackling. And I would argue that there's no position on the entire team that needs to, I need to see tackling from more than linebacker. So for Maverick and Dev to play as well as they did and not miss tackles, and Maverick was flying around, he made a really nice play on a tunnel screen. I think Devin Williams was really good as a pass rusher too, in terms of either lining up in the A gap, or there was a play in which he's the one that forced the wounded duck up into the air. He stunted around Anthony Smith and he hugged him tight. He planted his right foot and kind of ducked underneath his left hip to get right into the face of the quarterback. Those guys are playing confident and fast. And that's what you want to see from guys in their fourth, fifth, and sixth year on the program. So I, that was very exciting to me. And I'm trying not to get overly excited because I know it's one game and I know it's a lower level type of opponent. And things will start to raise the bar starting against Cal and Rutgers. But I had a lot of questions about what it would look like without Cody Lindenberg. And I think Maverick and Dev deserve their flowers because they were really good. And to your point about Baranowski, he gets banged up on, I think, the final defensive play. They were on the field, goes into the medical tent, and then, well, the defense doesn't come back on the field because the offense salts the game away. I asked around a little bit so far. I'd say the early word is very positive that Baranowski is going to be available very, very soon here. So, again, linebacker, we also saw Emmanuel Carmo get about 10 snaps. Most of them, I'd say seven of them, I think he was a stand-up pass rusher, which I've been trying to tell you, he's going to be a 3-4 outside linebacker in a 4-3 scheme. They're going to do a lot of different things with him. So I think it's really important where I also, like, it's one game, but Maverick and Devin were really good, and the lack of missed tackles to me is one of the talking points that deserves more talk.
Yeah, for sure. To your point, I think I saw Pro Football Focus had both Matt and Dev as the
number one and number two graded Gophers on defense.
Yeah, for sure. I
think deservingly so.
Yeah, for sure. The talk secondary a little bit. Both corners had starting corners, that being Nestor and Zaquan Bryan, both had pass breakups respectively with good coverage. But secondary in general, yes, there was the touchdown that Kerry Brown bit on, but overall, I thought the secondary really kind of held their own for the most part. It's a work in progress. I'm interested to see how it goes. You know, Coy Parrish didn't flash like he did last year. That's not an indictment on him. I didn't get a chance to watch it back yet, but my guess is they didn't go at him all that often.
That is the story of the game for Coy Parrish. Was Pete Lembo said, we're not going to give Coy Parrish essentially any chances to do what he does well. Now, there was one throw, I think, in the fourth quarter, of which if it's a better ball from the quarterback,
he picks that off.
He picks that off and he's still running.
Yeah.
But the corner situation is interesting because prior to the game, we found out that Mike Gerald, who's a redshirt freshman for Minnesota, was ruled out. He was essentially the number. If there was a cornerback competition in fall camp, I would say 1A would have been John Nestor, who started in that game. 1B would have been Mike Gerald. And it sounds like Minnesota is going to get hopefully get Mike Gerald back before the first bye week. But you were able to see the Iowa transfer out there. I'm not going to be the one to tell you that I think he's going to be an all Big Ten player. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he has the speed and athleticism to run with some of the creatures that are to come in October and November in the Big Ten. But I feel like we're also not appreciating that John Nestor did just fine on Thursday night. It was clear the game plan from Danny Collins was he watched, I'm going to assume, last year's game between Buffalo and their non-conference opponent that was a Power 4 opponent in Missouri. And if you watch that game, Buffalo came out just chucking it like 30 yards down the field, which is why Minnesota was playing off coverage. It almost reminded me of a Joe Rossi game yes. plan for so many years. So Minnesota was giving Buffalo the underneath, of which I don't know why it took Buffalo essentially 25 minutes to adjust to that and start to throw quick hitters. But it turns out when they did, they found a little bit of success. But Minnesota wanted to keep everything in front of them. I think that's what the game plan tells me. And again, I think once Mike Gerald comes back, I'm very curious to see what they do with Nestor. But Nestor's got an opportunity and a runway here to just take this thing and never let it look back. And I even think Kerry Brown got beat on a double move. And that was a horrendous ball, of which the ball hung in the air. But because Kerry bit so hard, he couldn't recover in time.
Right.
That's the thing, is I think Kerry Brown on the other 95% of plays was pretty good.
Yes.
But it's the one big glaring red mark that unfortunately is the shiny object in the room. Now, you want to eliminate explosive plays, but if there's only one explosive play on a night, any defensive coordinator will take that.
Yeah, absolutely.
The only other thing I'll note defensively, and then we can get to special teams because I already know I'm long-winded, but I'm excited to talk about Gopher football again,
mm-hmm.
is 151 total yards. You mentioned that. Buffalo was 1 of 11 on third down. Like, that is a tough place to live if you're going to have any resemblance of hope. Like, that is brutal. And on the 11 third downs, they essentially averaged, it was 3rd and 7 on average. And against this Gopher pass rush, which you saw the pass rush group essentially be Emmanuel Carmo, Matt Kingsbury, Devin Eastern, Anthony Smith, Jalen Logan Redding, some Carter Menz. Like, they mixed about 7 different guys there, some Rushon Lawrence too.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they can get creative with their packages. But as Anthony Smith told me after the game, you've got to earn the right to rush the passer. And if you allow 11 third downs and on an average it's 3rd and 7, you're going to probably have a lot of defensive success. You just would hope next time that you can force a turnover or two.
Yeah, I just want to read you a couple more of my notes here that I think you'll enjoy. Again, going back to our draft, I just have a note that says agent zero. Like, come on, man. Why wouldn't you take him, number one?
So I also asked him, because I know fans get curious about this stuff. Did you see his celebration now where he puts his 35-inch arms to the sky?
No, I didn't notice that.
And I asked him, what's the story? And he just goes, I'm very thankful to be playing here at the University of Minnesota.
That's cool.
I'm very thankful he's like, it's me trying to say thank you to everything. And mm-hmm. I'm like, you know what? That type of response in a day and age where money is so oriented, and again, I'm here to tell you, Anthony Smith is among the most well-compensated young men on the team. It's those type of responses where it's like, that's a guy you want to see do well, you know?
Yeah. Back to John Nestor. I wanted to get this in when you were talking about him, but I also didn't want to interrupt you. He got away with the classic Iowa grabs. Glad to see it. glad to see that he was able to get away with them in a Minnesota jersey as well. I loved that. Kerry Brown, again, if you ever get a chance to meet Kerry Brown, dude's fearless. Like, he is not a big dude and he just absolutely throws himself around. And that was evident a couple of times in this last game. I still expect good things from him. I had a note here. I know Aiden Goosby had been coming back from injury, maybe not his best game, but he is going to play a big role down the stretch. But I don't know, something didn't seem quite right there.
Yeah, the thing I would note to see if it gets better by the Rutgers game is you saw, because of the lack of available corners and nickel guys,
right,
because not only was Mike Gerald not available, Jayonte McMillan, who is, and Darius Green were both out.
Mm-hmm.
Of which, if Darius Green is healthy, he's your early down nickel. If Jayonte McMillan is healthy, to me, he's your passing down nickel. If Mike Gerald is healthy, maybe John Nestor slides inside to be nickel. Because they're lacking so many nickel options because they're hurt, Kerry Brown and Aiden Goosby and Coy Parrish even, I think all of them rotated at least one snap at nickel. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of balancing of roles going on back there. And so as they get more reps at these specific roles, you'd like to think the game slows down for them a bit, but I hear exactly what you're saying, and that's kind of what I'm chalking it up to, is just Kerry Brown and Goosby are just in some different roles that they're trying to figure out.
Right. Okay, let's talk special teams. I want to start again and tell you just my first quarter thoughts, okay? Are you ready?
My heart is a flutter.
It just reads, special teams, exclamation point. Feeling very good about that Allen Supcup pick.
Shout out to the long snapper, man.
Yeah, who, great play.
Tom Weston's first punt of his Gopher career. It's the long snapper who sprints 45 yards down the field to display some elite athleticism, I would say, or at least hand-eye coordination, and batting the ball backwards
mm-hmm.
to get it to Logan Loya, who goes into the fetal position at the two-yard line. You'd love to see an effort play like that. We talked about the Darius Taylor one earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Allen Supcup one is a great mention and was one I wanted to make as well.
Again, feeling good about that draft pick as well. No, overall, I thought special teams is actually pretty solid. I thought Coy made good decisions on the punt return. He also had a very solid return on the one he did return. They were not going to kick it to him on kickoff returns. Clearly they popped one up to Jameson Gears. I thought overall it was good. A kicker whose last name is evading me at the moment.
Brady Denneberg.
Denneberg had one kick that was like, what was that? But redeemed himself. It still went in. Overall, the special teams is really solid.
Do you know what the swing was if you look at the expected points added on special teams between Buffalo's and Minnesota's?
I know Minnesota is positive and Buffalo's negative, but I don't know the values. 6-point
swing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is exactly what I've been asking for 9 years, is just win special teams, be a net positive. And they were a net EPA of 6, which is another little hidden part of why they won the game. Denneberg hit all of his kicks. Buffalo gets the karma of missing theirs after.
Yeah.
I cannot fathom. And I was mauling to Daniel House in the press box. It was, I think, the first play out of the 2-minute warning before the end of the first half for Buffalo. It's 3rd and 4. They haven't run the ball well all night. And they just run it into the teeth of Devin Eastern and Anthony Smith on 3rd and 4 and then elect to kick the field goal. Tell me you're playing to lose or just playing not to win any more than that.
Sure.
And then the karma gods hit him with, oh, you're not playing to win. You're going to miss this field goal far left. But Denneberg made all of his kicks, and you can see the leg on kickoff is Dragan Kesich-esque. Tom Weston, his first punt, again, I think he's going to have the ability to flip the field. He had a 50-yarder within there. And then the other thing, I know everybody, including myself, wants to see Coy Parrish in the return game.
Yeah.
Buffalo's head coach, Pete Lembo, got his start as a special teams coach. Do you think the special teams coach was going to let the all Big Ten returner do anything? And the one return he did get, he got 18 yards on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be something to monitor here throughout the entire rest of the season, is how many teams actually punt to Coy Parrish. And then I also found it interesting that on the kick return, there is not a second returner back there. I say this with peace and love to Derek LeCaptain. He's not a return man. I know that he has broken Wisconsin high school records as a running back in that state.
Mm-hmm.
But when you put him then next to Coy Parrish, one of them is a returner and one of them is a linebacker. That's all I'm trying to say here.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to find out as it continues to go on how many teams just avoid Coy. Oh, look at that. I think I'm going to be using that for the next 3 months as my hyperfixation.
Avoid Koi.
I know so many people love to play the GGR drinking game.
Yeah.
But I've wanted this for so long. And the first game of year 9, shout out to special teams. Absolutely.
Okay, I don't think we have much else to cover. Anything else you want to get in before we wrap it up?
The only other thing I'll say is I sort of mentioned it within the first 2 hours of this, of which I assume we're at now, but it was also game one for the officials because my goodness, was that an absolutely brutal game to watch with the officiating.
Yeah, just the number of reviews in general.
The number of reviews, yeah. Or what wasn't reviewed, or what they had to have had like an 80% overturn rate, which is like, what are we watching on the field? Mm-hmm. I know we're human beings and we make mistakes, but it was clear that it was game one for this officiating crew. So I hopefully it gets better next week against Northwestern.
Yeah. It was frustrating from a viewing perspective. You know, you want the game to move along quickly, but those reviews really do get aggravating over time. I want them to be right, yes, but you know, I wasn't able to be there because I was out of town. But man, I can't imagine what it was like in the stadium to have to wait for that. It's even worse then.
It's especially because every review, like out of it too, there could be a TV timeout, which is three minutes long.
Right.
It's just like the flow of the game was so chunky at times.
Okay. I just want to put out there, I'm going to be going to the game, like I said, with my friends. With friends and their families, if you are looking for an opportunity to bring your kids to a game, I encourage you to check out this Northwestern State game. One, it's hopefully the weather holds up and it's great, but it's a great opportunity to introduce kids. It's kind of low pressure. I'm not saying that the Gophers are guaranteed to win, but it's low pressure from the standpoint of it probably won't be massively attended. So you'll have some space if you have kids, etc. I am still looking for a tailgating pass, so hit me up on Twitter or GI. I did not secure one yet, so please reach out to me. Yeah, laziness got the better part of me, I think, Ryan.
I think you've had a busy weekend. I will say that the weather looks fantastic. We're supposed to have a cold front come through, and it's probably going to be like a high of like 68 or 70 and sunny for the Northwestern State game, of which, Luke, I'm going to tell you this right now in front of all the listeners. If the Gophers lose to Northwestern State, I will drink a bottle of Malort.
I'm not rooting for that.
By the way, this is one of the fascinating parts about the podcasting world, or at least our audience, of which I love all of you dearly. I do. And I appreciate each and every one of you. The number of Malort-related emails or text messages, even from our friend Eric Vigo there.
Yeah.
Or just like Twitter mentions. I have probably gotten, I'm not joking you, 50 different people have reached out to me and with some sort of Malort-related story, of which is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Like it's like a random Chicago alcohol that is just, if you haven't had it yet and you go anywhere near a Total Wine or where Luke just was this past week in the city of Chicago, Luke, what was the menu you sent me?
I will keep my location, mostly because I don't remember the name of it. It was some pretty fancy hotel that we walked over to.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, I didn't stay at the fancy hotel. I just stayed in this kind of fancy area. My sister put it all together. But we walked over there, and yes, they had many a drink that had Malort in it. So
that's crazy.
Yeah.
To me. Like Malort,
and they're like infused Chicago Malorts with like, and it was mixed with like bourbons and all sorts of stuff. So
if people are looking for something, if you think about your tailgate and you think to yourself, we've got some people that are willing to try some new things, go to Total Wine and get some Malort shooters and see what people think.
Just on the note of, drinks in general, Maroon Madness. We made our debut. My son was the film director. Like, what an absolute thing. Do you know he keeps saying, he goes, can I watch my movie again?
He's a rock star. Many people are going to be saying that he is going to be in 2048.
Yeah.
He's going to be up for a couple of, I would say, Academy Awards for Best Director.
You know, he actually has said to me before we shot that, ad for Dinky Town Athletes. This is Maroon Madness, their new cocktail, which is it's just a recipe to make with Grey Duck vodka, which can support Dinky Town Athletes. But he has said to me before, like, Dad, I want to make shows and I want to make movies. I'm like, dude, sure, let's do it. And then when I said, hey, we need someone to hold the camera when we do this, and he was like, yep. And by the way, he did a really mediocre job, but he had a lot of fun.
That's all that matters. For like any kid under the age of 16, I just want them to have fun.
Yeah, with anything for sure.
They do, and that's going to drive the passion. But the last thing I'll say, Luke, through I think it's Labor Day evening. So if you're listening to this and you drive back from wherever, we've got 75% off at Gopher Illustrated. I know a lot of you always ask me, how can I support you? Support my work.
Yes.
Come become a member at Gopher Illustrated. Again, at the end of your 75%, you're thinking to yourself, well, I'll probably just, I don't want to do that to Ryan, but I'll probably cancel. Well, one, you get Paramount Plus for free,
yes,
which I can guarantee you can find shows on there that you like. And two, if you're a UFC person, guess what? In 2026, by the time that expires, that's the only place where UFC is going to be streamed. So instead of pay-per-view, you're already going to have Paramount Plus, and all your buddies are going to have it. And after your promotional period ends, Paramount Plus is for free. So 75% off. It's a great deal. If you love listening to the podcast and you wanted to get behind the paywall, read my work, come interact with the lovely folks over at Gopher Illustrated, and then check out Luke's favorite thread, of which the Ask Ryan Burns thread now has 5.895 million views, which is astounding to me because I'm about the most uninteresting person in the entire world. You can check out that thing, but 75% off, and we get to talk to you just in a few days to talk some Northwestern State, me boy.
Yeah, it should be fun. Again, support those that support us. Obviously, you can support Ryan on GI, support Blue Horizon Energy, support Burns Insurance Agency. At the end of the day, we have a ball doing this, talking Gopher football late on a Friday night. Yeah, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.